Hey, this is Tyler, one of the hosts of RangerCast. On our show, we talk about Power Rangers and other multi-unit spandex heroes. We've got news, reviews, interviews. We talk about the comics, the games, the toys, and all things more phenomenal. Find us at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check us out at RangerCast.net. May the power protect you.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Anime Lounge Podcast. I'm your host, Lance, here with my other host, Matt. And today we have our other host, Alec, joining us from across the states.
Hey, glad to be back.
Always great to have you, Alec.
Yeah, I feel like it's been forever since we talked to you last.
Maybe a month or two, I think. Yeah, actually, I've done a couple since I've moved here, so.
Oh, definitely since you moved, but it's definitely been a couple episodes since we had you last.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, glad to have you here because we know that you love fantasy and all that fun stuff, so you're going to make this conversation a little bit more fun.
Yeah, instantly thought of Alec when I was watching this. I was like, he's going to love this.
I do love my medieval fantasy animes. This is probably one of my like just niche areas to go towards.
Well, definitely. That and a side of like music or something.
I do like those. That's super niche. Hard to find.
Yep.
But they're good.
Yeah. All right. Before we get too much on a tangent, let's get back into format. What is everybody drinking today? Matt, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So I am drinking Driftless Glen, the bourbon whiskey deliciousness. And then, of course, I have a Spotted Cow. Can't go wrong with a Spotted Cow. Alec, what about you? What do you got today?
I am drinking some Blanton's Single Barrel Bourbon and chasing that down with some local Richmond, Virginia. It is from a meadery, but they're actually making a beer called Micro Goals Beer. Very excited to try this. Never had before.
Never had. What kind of beer does that fall under? Is that like an IPA or an amber? What do you got going on?
I have no idea. It just has a picture of a gangster bee with a boombox. I don't know what to make of that.
It's all black and white too. So yeah, it's literally a gangster bee. B with a chain. I thought the letter B. Nope. It's literally a B.
Like a bumblebee. Chain.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
We'll figure out what this is together.
Well, it's a cool looking can if that's the least to say.
Funktastic Meads Company.
Oh, you know what? My cousin, your sister-in-law, Missy, she's all about that mead stuff.
Oh, yeah, no. This is from the bar that they go to.
Oh, is that what it? Okay. Okay, mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense then.
Lance, what about you? What are you drinking?
Today, I'm going to be drinking an old-fashioned made from my wedding whiskey. And for our audience, when I got married, you know, when people try to, like, tie the knot and do something cute to play along with those kind of fun things, my wife and I, we know that we like to drink. And she knows I like whiskey, so our version of spilling two into one was pouring grain alcohol together into one barrel, and that was our unity. That's the word, unity. So we have our own homemade whiskey, and I made an old fashioned out of that, and I'm chasing it back with a Pabst Blue Ribbon. So that's my choice today.
Nice.
Constant
wedding bourbons.
All good stuff.
Yeah, your wedding whiskey is very good. I will say that.
Yep. I batched most of it, and at that point when I batched it, it aged for about a year and a half, and technically there is still more, quite a bit more in the barrel itself. And we're closing up on the two-year marker, so I'm going to have almost two-year-old barreled whiskey coming up. That's going to taste even better, technically. And I'll see. I haven't tapped into it in a couple weeks/months, maybe even. So it's going to be better than my bottled stuff already.
There you go.
Don't forget to change the temperatures. Like, bring it out into the snow for a little bit, then bring it down into your basement. So that way, like, the heat, when it's warm, it sucks the bourbon into the wood. And when it's cold, it tightens up and it forces all the bourbon out of the wood.
Yep.
And it, like, super flavors your bourbon barrel.
Yep. That sounds extra fancy. And
it's
definitely
super scientific, yeah, and you should definitely do it.
I was going to say, scientifically, that sounds right and awesome. I just kept it in my basement for almost 2 years, and it's just been in a consistently cool environment.
Gotcha.
All I can say is it's good, but
I'm sure.
Of course, I could have played with the flavors a little bit or something.
Yeah, it's all good though.
So, Matt, before we get into today's activities, what are we going to be covering today?
Yeah, I am so excited to talk about this one. We are covering Frieren Beyond Journey's End. And the way I like to think about this is, what do you do as an elf after you've killed the Demon King? What does your party do? And as somebody who can live for almost an eternity, like, just how do you live your life? And Frayrin takes it and puts it on steroids. And I love it. I love the in Frayrin Beyond Journey's End. We start the series with the hero party coming back from defeating the Demon King. A bunch of time has passed, and now she is returning through that journey with all of the memories that she made, and she is going to travel with new companions, Fern and Stark, and they're going to go to heaven, but she's going to use everything that she learned on her previous journey and all the memories that she made with that hero's journey to kind of help grow herself and journey to heaven.
Yeah, that'll do. If anybody has lost any kind of recollection of kind of the purpose of the show, it's yes, we are reliving Frieren's past, but as we are doing so, we also have our own reason for travels, and that is to go to this place of heaven, Aureole. And I, on my first watch through, I totally forgot the whole purpose of the show. I thought it was literally just reliving history, reliving memories. But yes, there is an actual purpose of their travels. So let's bring that into focus.
Yes. Lance, I know you have a word for today that I can't believe we haven't used yet. Do you want to let everybody know what it is?
Yes, today's Lance's Lessons is going to be the Japanese word for magic. And if you don't know what magic is, after reading a lot of subbed anime, the Japanese word for magic is maho. And maho is spelled M-A-H-O. And maho is very relevant to today's episode because obviously we're following Elf, who knows almost everything there is to about magic. And she's incredible.
Yeah, I like it. I can't believe we haven't used that yet.
Yeah.
You would think of all of the animes that you guys have covered, magic would have been at least one of the themes.
Yep. I just think it was too easy in the past. I'm like, okay, I just need to get it out there at this point. We're like we're almost 80 episodes into this, and it's like, it's time to get it in there.
I like it. I kind of liked how it's majority magic, majority mages. It's kind of hard to find a medieval show like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is, without going into it. Yeah, no, I do completely agree. It's completely revolved around magic, and I think it's great.
And now that we got that out of the way, Matt, you went ahead and read the manga for this series. You want to share with us some Matt's manga mentions?
Nani?
Yeah, definitely. I am going to say I am insanely surprised how little there was left out of the manga.
Okay.
Or really anybody's reference. Think of the manga, the anime is just a visual elongated representation of everything that happened in the manga. There's no drastic changes. There's really only a couple details that are put into the manga that aren't in the anime. And to put it in reference, season one ends on chapter 60. Lance, you and I have been doing this a while. 60 chapters isn't very much, especially when you consider it's 28 episodes.
Yeah, I was just about to say, this is essentially two seasons worth of information. Yeah. Two seasons plus, and it's ending on chapter 60?
Yes. For anybody who hasn't followed along, for anybody that's new, most seasons are like 40 chapters.
Right.
And we're at 60.
So were these chapters like excessively long?
No, not really. But it was literally everything that was in the chapter was in the anime.
Oh.
It's wild. So it's like stayed so true to the story.
Almost verbatim true to the story. The only thing that was really different is fights were longer. They would pan to scenery more often. You would see more scenery, like the walk with Fomel and Frayrin, like when they're through the market just talking about deceiving demons. That whole thing happens, but like you see it in paneled forms. You know, they're talking in one section and then they're talking in another section, and then like you'll see some walking, but obviously in the anime, it's everything's fluid, everything's animated all together. So it's just you get this, you know, we'll say half a chapter worth of 8 pages worth of a conversation, and it takes 10 minutes because I think it was 5 minutes because the whole thing is just together instead of handled.
Makes sense.
That's so, kind of cool.
Yeah, they did an amazing job. A lot of the notes I took were more for references for me so that I could remember certain instances. So like one bullet point I have is 27 years after Hommel dies, Byrne is 16. So it's just kind of a reference point for me to remember how old Byrne is and when the journey kind of starts, because the true heart of the journey happens at 27 years. Like that's when you really get into Byrne and Frayrin traveling versus Byrne kind of getting older, if that makes sense.
Yep, makes sense. It's a good reference point too. That's like 27 is such a kind of an odd spot for something to just decide to start. Like usually it's a round number, like some kind of zero number or a five.
Yep.
But 27, yeah.
Something else is they spent 6 months looking for Moonweed. So it was the...
Yep, I got that in my notes.
Like I said, a lot of it's just reference points for me because I might have missed something.
It was a small, stupid note. But it's something that I caught on to on my second watch through. I'm like, that's a long ass time to be carrying around a fucking child just to look for some stupid flower. I mean, obviously it's not a stupid flower because they're doing it for Hemel's honor, but still, that's a long time for a child to be walking around half a year wasting your time.
But to Fern, that's, you know, like a week.
Yeah, to Fern, it's nothing. But to Fern, it's a long ass time.
Could you imagine being like, what, 14, 15 years old and some lady's like, look for a flower for the next 6 months of your life?
Absolutely not. So I don't blame Fern's attitude as the story progresses. Like she's short-tempered to a degree, very justifiably.
Yes.
I have a kind of a question for you in particular, Matt, when it comes to, you know, manga differences with the anime, and especially with this one being so close. Mm-hmm. This is just looking at it from a different angle. Do you view that as laziness from the animators or kind of over conviction in the overall storyline?
If the story is good, stay to the story. Like if I am perfect, everything they did I think was fantastic. They made a visually compelling story more visual, so I'm perfectly accepting of that. Like it's very much like Demon Slayer where the whole thing is just the fighting is visual, so give me good visuals. I have no issues with this. If you want to make a one page fight into an hour, that might be excessive.
That's a lot, but I understand the essence of what you mean. Yeah.
Then as long as it's visually well done, like I have no qualms about it. It's because the story itself is so good. I think it's actually better that they did it this way because the story gets you sucked in and then the world building kind of gets you immersed into the show.
Okay, cool. I like that.
But if the story is terrible, then yeah, no, just deviate. It's fine.
Yeah.
One difference that we had, so when Luger is, for anybody who doesn't remember, Luger is basically the head demon of the peace people that were in the village.
In the demon arc?
Yes. When the peace treaty demons, the three of them. So when Luger is remembering who Frayrin was, she was actually standing on a pile of dead bodies.
Ooh, like, menacing.
Yes, that part was very menacing.
That kind of sounds a little anti Frayrin too. Like that sounds almost too badass of her.
This is during
she did hate demons with a passion. I mean, she sees one and she's like instantly in fight mode.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to remember this is during the Demon King when he was still alive, so they were fighting a lot of demons.
Sure.
It was a different time period, you know. It's the world of peace versus fighting.
Yeah, because the Frayrin we know is the one of peacetime.
Yep.
But clearly, I mean, in the fight scenes ahead, I mean, we get to see little glimpses of her in her wartime.
Yep. And also Fern was gone already at this point. Like she had ran away with Stark and the lord of the area. I don't remember his name, but so they were gone and Luger was kind of being like, how do I know who the, like, what did she remind me of? And then he has the flashback of Frayrin standing on these pile of dead bodies with her super menacing look. And I was like, oh, that's so badass. Yeah. But yes, that's slightly different. Honestly, it's kind of a horse a piece choose between which one I like better, because they're both very well done, because I like Fern having her moments of more than just being stoic while she fights. Then Fern and Stark got new clothes from the town, because if you remember during the fight with the demons, both their clothes were destroyed by the two demons. So the town had actually made them new clothes to replace the ones in Gratitude.
Like clothes that looked different as well?
No, they were identical.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like they got whole new like wardrobe changes in the manga, and in the show they stayed exactly the same.
No, this isn't like some cartoon where the characters grow up and wear the exact same things. No, they're still in the same things.
Okay, gotcha. But like they hand them the new clothes in the manga?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they're basically like half bowing and handing them these clothes.
Kind of adds to the wholesomeness of the show.
Mm-hmm. So when Stark and Sign lose their clothes gambling, Fern has to buy their clothes back.
Oh, that's a difference.
Yep.
Oh, they said they got it back for free.
Yeah, Fern made it very, very clear that they were nice enough to give them back their shit for free.
Yep. Interesting. The only thing that they were nice enough to give back was Stark's axe. She got that for free.
Okay.
But not the clothes.
The weapon. The weapon is what they give back for free. That could be made of heavy metals and destruction ability.
It's anime logic.
Okay.
Mages are generally considered adults once they are of the fifth rank.
Okay, so at the point of this information, do we know what Fern is considered as a rank?
Fern is third.
Third? Yeah, okay, that sounds right. Yep.
Basically, when she took the exam, she took the third rank mage one.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the closest.
Right. The earliest one she could take, she took, right? Mm-hmm. That was about episode 20-ish.
So one thing, I don't know if you guys picked up on it or how clearly they said it. You know, being deaf, I can only hear or see things. So, you know, Luwain. she controls magic that manipulates water. So she basically controls the magic within water, not water itself.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay, that's a slight.
That's why she has to infuse it first.
Yes. So that's why she can pour mana into water, and that's why when it's raining, she can basically make that tsunami worth of a water ball, because she can pull the magic together, which would then in turn pull all the water together, and that's how she manipulates water. She talks about how she can't create water, and that's mm-hmm. why.
Sure, that makes sense.
So Lauften and Richter are both second class mages. So Lauften, she's the one that can use like that super step.
The tribal spell.
Yep. She's the one that pulls the bird away from Freyrin and like steps away, essentially. So that's that one.
With the super speed. Yep. It's kind of like a instant transmission from Goku.
I was thinking that, or from Bleach, their drawing a blank on the what it's called, but that
she was the girl that was basically being the granddaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The quiet one eating all the sweets.
Yep. And then so she's a second class mage, and then Richter is the old man, or the middle-aged man as he was called,
the egotistical old man that fixed Fern's wand or staff.
Yes. Yep. Yure is a second class mage, so she's the one that got stabbed trying to brainwash the clone sensei, the second proctor,
right?
Yeah, so she was saying that they don't have a mind.
Yep
So she's actually a second class mage. So basically, if you think about it, like a first class mage would be considered like the cream of the crop, and then second class would be, I almost kind of want to put it in, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor for it, but basically, you know, you're one in a thousand individual is a first class, and then you're one in like 100 would be considered like a second class. While it's still really good, it's just not quite at the same level as a first class.
Okay.
Verbal is a second class mage. I don't remember, did they actually say what class each of the people were?
It's possible. Things
I think they announce themselves sometimes, but not all of them.
Yeah.
This is kind of one of those shows where you just sit back, relax, and whatever information they throw at you, you might as well be high as a kite and be like, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Exactly how it was.
Yeah. Like whatever you say, man, that's what you are. And you just go with the flow.
So verbal, his binding spell makes it so you can't use your magic or move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely binding thing.
As long as he's looking at all of you.
Yep. You actually get to see Denkin's group get attacked by the clone Freyrin. Basically, she's shooting the ordinary offensive magic at them. Not really trying. She's just like, no, fuck these guys. Just go away. kind of attacks.
Okay,
yeah, because in the anime, it was like, oh, she's guarding this area.
Yep.
Fuck that. We're not going to do anything right now.
I mean, she did have like one little blast and they all hit around the corners, but that was about it.
Yeah, so they all walk into that room, realize it's Freyrin, and they're like, that's when he says his, if this wasn't an exam, I would have used my...
Escape golem.
Like, he's saying that as Freyrin's starting to attack them.
Yep, don't blame him. He's smart.
Right?
Mm-hmm. He was a cool character.
So the first proctor, he's actually talking about everything that's going on inside the tomb. Like who that demon that makes all the clones, he's talking about it. And just a bunch of stuff like that. He's talking about it to the individual that says, introduces him to like the first or the final stage of the last exam. Like he's that one talking in front of the door. So those two are communicating with each other.
The proctor with like glasses, the Asian guy? Okay.
Yes.
Japanese animation, the Asian guy?
Yeah. So descriptive.
But yes, I know exactly who you're talking about. And yes, it's that person. You find out that almost every dungeon was conquered during the subjugation of the Demon King, which means Fern and the hero party pretty much conquered all of the dungeons. Because of course, Freyrin says that she's a part of the group that conquered the most ever.
Yep.
You learn of the spells that Freyrin uses against herself. And one of them is Judra Jilum. Pretty sure I'm saying that wrong. But that's the lightning spell.
Okay.
And then Vol Zanvel is, they call it Hell's Inferno, but it's the fire attack.
Okay. It was probably that super colorful mega blast.
No, that was shattering.
Oh.
That was shattering spell. The hellfire was like that super crimson purple fire that was being like thrown all around the room.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, just that whole battle scene was just so beautiful. So everything just kind of... And in my memory.
So the like the golem part of the fight doesn't, you don't see that in the manga. It's a lot of just attacking back and forth, and Fern also using a Zoldrak back and forth. So the middle part of the fight doesn't happen in the manga that it does in the anime. And then the last thing I have written down is Fern never actually goes to Rick Richter's store. So that conversation never happens.
Oh, with the staff? What's
at the end? Yeah, with the staff. So it's...
She never recovers Fern's old staff. They got obliterated.
Fern never goes to the store.
Oh, so when her and Stark were like on that little date and the dude's like, yeah, take care of your staff, because I didn't need to do this for you. Like pretty that much. Scene never happened.
Yeah, that never happens. Basically, Fern and Stark, they go around town, do all that stuff. And then Fern comes back to the inn and the staff is laying on her bed.
Okay.
So yeah, you never get to see the beautifully well done recreation of the staff and all that fun stuff.
Okay. Well, it was a cool little scene. I'm just kind of surprised that the manga did some anime logic and just had it fucking reappear.
Well, no, because Freyrin goes to the store, basically does her bullshit of, well, I guess if you can't do it, I'll find somebody else. And he's like, well, I never said I couldn't do it,
right,
as he's looking at it. And then it goes to Fern and Stark going on their pseudo date thing. And then it's together on the bed.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's all I got. It was 60 chapters. Such a fun read. Very, very well done.
Yeah, it doesn't...
Highly recommend it.
Doesn't sound too bad, too long.
Nope.
Because there's definitely some more difficult anime or manga out there that 60 chapters could take you quite a while.
Yeah, you're telling me. Most of them were like 18 to 19 pages. It is still ongoing, and there is currently 128 chapters.
Okay.
Nice.
So that's definitely season two.
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for the Matt's manga mentions. I also feel like I forgot to mention that before we jump into some anime content, and everybody stay tuned to the end of the episode, because I'll give a short Pokemon quiz that I would like to throw out to everybody. So
nice.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, we'll go some OG stuff.
Mm.
And these are going to be questions that I made up myself, not some stupid red and blue Blaine's bullshit that you might have heard on last week's episode. So we'll go from there. We'll go from that one. Oh, so we'll just
stay
go with
tuned
that.
For that at the end of the episode.
Yeah. All right. Now, with that being said, let's just jump into this anime, everybody. So, Alec, says you're the one.
Because I basically pushed this on Lance. I was like, you have to watch this. You have to watch this. You have to watch this. And Lance did his whole, well, is it really that good? The picture doesn't look that interesting. It's like, yeah, no.
Judging the book by its cover.
Yeah, dude, it always fails.
Yes. We both did it with SLF. SLF was fantastic. But this one was, oh my God. How, Lance, we kind of talked about this already, but where does this fall? Does this overtake anything on your list of top animes?
Ooh, okay. So if we're going to be talking top, this definitely does not clear my top five.
Okay.
Kind of like how...
Do you want to give a quick reminder of your top five?
Oh,
geez. For any of our new listeners?
Right. Okay. Being on the spot in a way, I guess some things that would be on my top five. It's kind of hard to take Yu Yu Hakusho away from anything.
Yep.
I got Dr. Stone, Jujutsu Kaisen.
That's only three.
Being put on the spot's kind of hard.
There's so many to choose.
Yeah. Such an ass. I should have asked this pre-production questions.
Right? I don't know. I guess if we want to talk about like story building kind of things, like Bleach is kind of badass. Like, okay. I'm really appreciative of Bleach. So let's put that in the top five.
Okay.
And then because I'm put on the spot, let's just say like at the moment, Tokyo Ghoul. Let's go a little bit hardcore, gruesome.
Okay.
So without having time to completely figure everything out, let's just go with those.
Okay. Okay. That's a good list. Alec, I put Lance on the spot and you had about 2 minutes to think about it.
Yeah. So I would definitely rewatch this for sure. It's definitely on my rewatch list. So it's not on my one and done. So I'd definitely say top tier mid-level anime. Simply because the story hasn't been fully fleshed out yet. I'm very curious to see how it goes from here.
Okay.
I guess as far as animes that it replaces, probably other, you know, mid-level animes. I'm thinking of like Code Geass.
Okay.
Good choice. Black Butler. Things of that nature where like they're good. They're solid, they're rewatchable, but they're not my, again, like Lance, not my top five favorites.
Okay.
I'm very curious to see where this goes. I think it has a lot to go off of, but I would definitely say it's more mid-level anime, not quite top tier list.
So top 10, not top five.
Okay. No. I would even put it probably around like the 15 to 20, probably. The thing about my top 10 is there's a lot of things that are like tied. Like probably I have like four that are tied for first, which means like second place already is fifth. So like my rating system is really skewed in that sense. I just watch so many anime. I can't possibly rate them accurately.
No, and I think that's fair because I think you can ask personally, what is your top three, top five? And that can be any random ass anime. But if we're going to start talking about top 10, top 15, top 20, we need to start asking some niche questions. And then categories can get split all over the place. So
exactly.
Depending on the category, like slice of life, I think this might be like top three slice of life.
Yes. And for this was the, I would say this was the,
I wouldn't
tied for first life, most though. Wholesome. No? It was very wholesome show. Where
this is a very weird kind of category for a slice of life. Cause like it is and it isn't.
Like Spy Family. I would put that in there. Very wholesome show.
Uh-huh.
This was very wholesome. I mean, the characters were very genuine. They were very moral. You know, they followed dialogue very well. Everything was believable. You know, it was very, very well written.
Yep.
But there was no cursing. There was no nudity. There was like, it was just very like, you know, my kid could walk in on me watching the show. And unless it was, what's her name? The green haired girl. Unless it was her slicing a bitch up.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the only time where it ever strayed into gruesome.
Right. In today's culture, this is the cleanest, best rated anime that you can show literally anybody. Like this is
while still high quality.
Yeah, exactly. This is a 1 in 100 in that kind of category.
Mm-hmm,
1 in 1,000,000, actually. Like every anime has some form of fan service or swearing or something to like give some kind of shortcut. Some
gruesomeness in
a
aspects.
Little bit. Like it was
the very end. The very like the, end, I would say we got gruesome, and then there was like one lewd character. The girl with the green shorts, she was, I guess, the one fan service person. But overall, I mean, very, very wholesome show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt, how do you rate this show for yourself then?
A little bit of both of your take. This This isn't breaking my top five, only for the fact that I want more of it. But at the same time, like, this could easily be a top two anime. Like, easily.
Yeah.
With its progression?
Yes. Like, absolutely. If it stays on this path, like, I could easily, like, if I wanted to, I could put this in the top five. Because the problem is, through certain aspects, some of my top have fluctuated because of certain things that are going on. But Yu Yu Hakusho will always be on my top. I do have just a niche for Tokyo Ghoul. It can't get past it, especially after reading the manga. Absolutely love it. Bleach is in my top five. The final arc definitely makes up for any filler that happens within Bleach, and I know what happens. So yes, I can be like, yeah, no, that final arc definitely makes up for everything else. And so there's that. But then, you know, it's where do you put like Slime? I absolutely love Slime. Do I put that in my top five? I think Chainsaw Man, for anybody who can't see it, which is everybody that is listening to this podcast. I have a signature from Power, the voice actor for Power. Chainsaw Man is great. Jujutsu season 1, season 2, absolutely fantastic. That's all I'm going to say about Jujutsu.
Those are fantastic. Listeners, he's saying that because he knows everything about the manga too. So
yes, I know what's going on. I'm much further ahead in the manga for Jujutsu. So I'm not going to say anything, but Jujutsu is fantastic. It's hard because how do I not contradict myself? And it's impossible, because if that was case, I can only pick shows that were finished. So
yeah, I was about to say, like, mm-hmm. I think we're all on the same spectrum, being like, yes, this is amazing, but yes, it's not finished, and it's too hard to give it an absolute grade until we can say so.
Because I think the issue with it anointing it top five worthy is I don't know where it's going
exactly,
and that's
I think what was something that we can share is we're at the halfway marker, maybe even a little bit further as far as distance goes, because they made a reference in the anime that they're about halfway there to the demon continent, at least.
No, they still have plenty of time. Because remember, they said that this is going to be a 10-year long journey, and they were only in like the first year of it.
No, they're...
So they're 2 years
into it. They're a couple years into it.
2 years, okay.
And it was only 10 years because... Hommel made it take 10 years because, you know, they had to conquer every single dungeon imaginable. Well, all that's happened already, so...
And save civilians along the way. So they're just being good heroes. So distance, there is just one specific moment that I really, really remember them saying that they're all like, they're halfway there, at least location wise like the distance that it takes to get from where they started to where it's going to end. I feel like that was said somewhere along the line.
Okay. I do remember them talking about distance, but I could have sworn that they said it was going to be 10 years. Like, this journey is going to take 10 years.
100%. They also said that. I also think that they also said that they're about halfway there.
Okay. I do remember something about that too. Matt, do you have something?
I think they said it could take up to 10 years. Like, this could take 10 years because the hero party took 10 years. So it's like, yep, that's the reference point of...
Right, exactly, yeah.
I guess we'll see. But I think that's my one hesitation towards making this like top. And that's just, I am not sure where it's going. I have an idea. And then in most of your typical shonens, you have a pretty, what your idea is going to be how it ends is a fairly good idea as far as how something's going to end by season one. I also forgot Jobless. I also forgot ReZero. Those are absolutely fantastic. This, as far as a fantasy anime is concerned, it's definitely like top one or two. It is amazing. And yes, I consider it just a fantasy anime, not anything, no other subcategories. Like, it's just a fantasy.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantasy. Yeah, that's all it really, honestly, it is fantasy. You can throw some other stuff at the wall and hopes that it sticks, but yes, it is pure fantasy.
D&D party style kind of thing.
Yep.
So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, but back to your idea of where this is going, like we kind of alluded to this. They talked about this a handful of times, that they're on their way to Aurelia, they're on their way to heaven. And what I'm taking away from this is that Frieren, she's trying to learn the ways of humans, and she's trying to understand them, and she's trying to feel empathetic towards everybody. So she wants to go to Aurelie so that she could talk to essentially the spirit of Hemel, because she's kind of...
And Heiter,
yeah, and just everybody in general at this point, because, you know, well, I guess those are the only two that died.
Flamme.
Oh, and her, yeah, good point. Okay, so she's going to talk to people in her past that have died, because she had no reason to believe in any forms of religion because of lack of proof or whatever she needed. But she's at this point in time where she regrets her past choices on not learning everything about her party and the people who were closest to her. So if she were to go to Aurelie, she could reconnect and really be with someone once again. And what I'm guessing is to give a true final goodbye in an emotional way. So I think that's how this series is driving towards.
Okay, that's a good theory. Alec, do you have anything?
Yeah, a little bit. So with any typical storyline, there has to be, you know, two basic things. There has to be an intent. So for them, their intent is, you know, finding heaven, you know, reconciling with their lost loved ones. And there has to be an obstacle. And so far, there's not really been an obstacle. There's been a barrier. They haven't been able to progress into the Northern Lands because they don't have a first class mage, which was the whole summit of the season of, you know, getting somebody with a first class mage license. So there's been a barrier, but there hasn't been an obstacle. There hasn't been, like, you know, a supreme emperor dragon blocking the way, or maybe like a team of the remnants of the Demon King, or maybe like his old generals all banded up together to create a new demon force. I think that's where the next season is going to go, is it's going to present that next obstacle in their way that's going to prevent them from getting to heaven.
I like that so much. You bring up so much truth that's very true. Like we exactly, you're right that we can't continue our journey until we are a first class mage, or at least being accompanied by one, which was an important aspect to this final arc, which is why we're going through this whole thing to begin with. So
tuning exam.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's something very important to keep in mind for everybody. We all, yeah, at the same time, yeah, like you were alluding at, is we don't have a big baddie. We don't have...
I think they were alluding to it with that Aura demon, the...
Aurora,
Aurora the Guillotine, and Lugard and Drakt and all those other vampire-like demons. I think they were to the fact that there's powerful demons out there still. Like they might have gotten rid of this, like the super powerful ones, like the Zoldrak dude and the Demon King himself, but like there's still remnants of the demon horde, and I think they're gonna make a much bigger impact now that they're past the Northern Lands and into the more dangerous part of the warfare area.
Oh yeah, that makes way more sense too. Yeah, I would only expect things to get more dangerous as we explore further. Especially as we approach the old demon lord territory.
Mm-hmm. Do you find it weird that heaven is in the same exact spot that the demon's lair was in?
Complete
irony. Yeah, it's only 777 ironic. Feet above. So
as far as I'm concerned, I have no guesses. I'm just along for the journey. I'm loving it so much. I really don't want to speculate anything. I agree with you, Lance and Alec, in what you believe is going to be. You, Alec, you make amazing points, and every time you're talking, I'm like, oh yeah, they made mention of that somewhere in the show. Like, it's just, is this foreshadowing? Is this foreshadowing? Is this foreshadowing? And I can't wait to find out. Like, that's, I don't want to guess. I want no ideas. I am just looking forward to it. I stopped reading the manga at chapter 60 because I'm like, I want to know nothing. So I know nothing. But I'm cool with that.
But that's the best way. Yeah, this anime itself is just too beautiful to ruin with future knowledge. Let's just fucking, you're going on it for the ride. It's a great ride.
Yeah, I ruined My Hero Academia that way, so let's not ruin Frayrin.
Right.
Alec, because you're our guest, I'm going to give this question to you first. Do you have a favorite character?
You know what? It was really hard with this show because I feel like it was a lot more like time placement understanding rather than actual character development. But one character that really stood out to me is just like an all-around, like, I was smiling every single time this person came on the screen. I knew that I was going to be, that something good was going to happen, and that goes to Verbal. He was one of the contestants in the first the first class mage tournament.
With the bird capturing.
He was the bird capturing. He was the one with the white hair and the offensive spells, and he's like the leader of a mage battalion in the north, and the dude just totally lives up to his name. Super badass, really flashy spells, and just exuberated confidence. The dude was just total badass. Loved every scene he had.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was someone to fear. He's someone formidable.
Okay, Alec, I think that's a great character. Definitely hope we get to see more of him. It would be really great if that's like one of the stops on the journey is his town and defeating some demons alongside with him and learning what spell he was granted, because he said he got the yeah. most powerful offensive magic or something like that.
That's all he yeah. was worried about.
So I'm very curious to learn what spell he has. So that's a great choice.
Robot, who wants to go next?
Sorry, before anyone continues, just one last thing I want to throw at him was I really appreciated how, I don't remember exactly who said it, but they said like he was able to turn off like his killing instinct kind of thing. Like he's doing a job and he does what he has to do. So like if he has to kill, he'll kill. Otherwise, he's getting his job done. And that was made very clear when he was going around town and he was looking for a warrior and they found Stark. And he's like, I need you to come kill this giant ass beast because apparently I need you in my magic. Not strong enough. I don't understand why that's not possible, but they needed a warrior. And the point was that he'll kill if he has to, but only if he has to. Like he made it very clear that he doesn't want to kill. And I love that about him, because like there's a realistic thing about that, especially if we're trying to think like this is like kind of the past kind of thing, like kill or be killed kind of mentality. And yeah. that's how he lives his life.
Yeah, if you were to isekai yourself into that world, that would probably be the most common, I can't say the most common, but that would be the easiest to kind of understand. It's like, I don't want to do this, but I have to.
Right.
So here it is.
Yep. And there's always going to be an enemy in the way, especially if you're trying to make top sorcerer kind of stuff.
Yep. Lance, do you have a favorite character?
I guess I can make two arguments for a favorite character and who I'm most interested in.
Okay.
So for the easy one, my favorite character, I'm going to go with Stark.
Okay.
And he's funny.
Stark, yeah, exactly. Because he's funny. He's the one that brings energy into our trio.
Yep.
He's this badass that doesn't know that he's a badass. And I really appreciated that during the dragon fight. And like, yeah, there was this cowardice about him, but it really showed that he underestimated himself so much that he took out a dragon with such ease. Didn't even know he killed it. Exactly. And the fact that Aizen was even scared of him, which brings out even more interest out of him, because if Aizen helped defeat the Demon Lord and he's scared of his pupil, I can only imagine what's going to come out of this guy.
You get little tastes of it, but you know you haven't seen the full potential of him yet.
Oh, exactly.
Stark is
so great.
I love the part where Fern is mad at Stark, not because of him putting his cold hand on her, but it was when he grabbed her shoulder. It legitimately scared her, and she didn't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
And you have to think, this is somebody who's been fighting demons almost her entire life, and a hand holding her shoulder down was what scared her.
Yeah. I mean, that can go in multiple directions too, you know, like women being taken control of because of men or something like that. Like we can go.
Literally just he's that powerful.
Like, I know. I guess I was going to get oddly poetic about it. But yeah, Stark is really strong. And here's one thing that threw me off was watching this in English dub. They clearly pronunciate his name with like an SH, Stark.
Yeah, Stark. Yeah. But it's like a German way of saying
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
German. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then when you look at the characters, like the way everything's spelt out, it's Stark, and it's just like, that's a little off. They clearly said Stark with a hard Stark, and I really did not like that there wasn't an H in there. So that's a personal thing. I mean, it's an American thing, probably, but yeah.
Absolutely. Alec, you want to give us a little bit of a
German... I have a question.
Okay.
It's about the Germanness. I've noticed this across multiple different animes, like Fate Zero, Frieren, a bunch of different animes. The magic is all in German.
Yes.
Why? Like there's so many, like there's Latin, there's German, there's so many other languages. Why is it always German for magic?
Sounds cool.
Okay.
To the Japanese, it's a different slur of the tongue, so it sounds more fun. It just exactly like you were saying, Latin. It's old and it's unfamiliar. So if you say Latin shit, it sounds cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm gonna go with.
And I feel like German is probably a little bit easier to figure everything out in, if that makes sense, because you know you can find more people that speak German than you can Latin.
Sure.
So it's probably just the German
verbiage dialect.
Yeah, the German dialect it sounds almost more menacing because it's stark and it's versus stark.
Yeah, there's a little bit of aggression towards the name. So
okay, it's like when they're casting spells, like it really kind of
resonates more. You know, it's Ubel versus Ubel. It's
verbal just, instead of werbal.
Yeah, it probably has everything to do with the dialect itself and how you're saying it. Because I know in Japanese, a lot of words, it matters how you pronunciate them and you enunciate them. So that's why it's probably one of those things where it's like you live your life living this way and you get to actually put a lot of emphasis and it doesn't change anything.
Gotcha. So,
or is that Chinese? Am I thinking of Chinese
ma?
No, I mean, Japanese is very strict on their vowels. There's no deviation like American is. So
I think you're thinking of Mandarin where you have the different enunciations of like ma, ma, ma. Ma, 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 ma are all different words.
Yeah, so it's your inflection points. It's the same spelling, but how you inflect the word changes what the word is.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes a lot more sense too.
So it's just one of those things where you can almost play with the words and have more fun with it versus Latin, which is very, I know nothing about Latin, so I'm not going to go down that road.
Fair.
But I was just curious. I was like, why German of all languages for magic?
I also feel like it's what you think of, because when you think of dragons and you think of fantasy magic, you think of castles,
yep,
and just Germanic locations. So it's probably just how people associate with everything. So it just makes it more fun. And then of course, you know, same thing like Dragon Ball Z, where Vegeta is like all the names mean something and they're all vegetables. So it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, cool. So you can do the same thing in German.
I guess that's true. Okay, cool. Well, thanks, Matt. Nice little tidbit there.
Yeah, because I don't know. Did you guys look up like what Freyrin and Himmel and Heiter and Eisen, like all their names have a German translation?
I mean, I recognize they were all German, but I didn't know. I mean, I assumed Freyrin means fire,
something like that. I just remember a long time ago, like when this anime first launched, I sent Matt a TikTok on somebody explaining literally everybody's German translation, and it all makes complete sense.
Yeah. Himmel's got to be something like honor.
Quick Google search.
Okay, so Freyrin means freeze.
Interesting. Okay.
Fern means remote, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, she's kind of emotionally remote.
Himmel means heaven.
All right. He's very pure. I thought he was a paladin when I first saw him.
Yeah, because Heiter, when it first started, like Himmel was like the agnostic one. I was like, dude, it can go either way. But and then like Heiter is like, you know what? When you talk about it, I would prefer life being that way. And that's kind of how Heiter thought too, to be honest.
But speaking of Heiter, his name is Bright.
Okay. What's Eisen? Because that's also in Lord of the Rings, Isengard.
Yes.
Dude, well, and speaking of Lord of the Rings, like, I don't know, like, the back music going on with, like, the violin and stuff like that. It was pure, I thought Lord of the Rings the entire time watching this.
I can see that, yeah.
Eisen means iron.
Okay.
Which is very, very fitting.
I mean, the fucking
dwarf, yeah.
Dude can fall from any height and still land on his head and not be impacted at all.
That scene was fucking hilarious. Yeah.
I definitely wrote that down as one of my LOL scenes. I laughed out loud so hard at that. Like, it was so stupid, but so funny.
Eisen could just fall from any height and be unaffected.
That's not normal. Yeah, it's fine.
And for our listeners, that scene was explained when our crew got picked up by some giant fucking bird in a carriage with some traveling merchant. And I don't know if you guys look closely, but when that carriage was being dragged through the sky by that bird, like that horse was still at the end of that wooden piece of plank.
Just dangling.
Yeah. Like, physics would not let that horse be just letting there dangling. They're like, that's got to be some strong ass piece of wood, or even if that was metal. I don't know, maybe metal. But I was like, dude, that horse, that thing would have snapped off so fucking soon.
Very I was looking at it too. I was like, that horse would be gone. But okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So Stark is strong, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
I want to say Luger is blood.
Mm-hmm. Also makes sense because that was his power.
Lugner is liar, which makes kind of sense. Also
makes sense. Why'd you say blood earlier?
I think one of them. Is I think because I was thinking about
his power.
Yeah, his power.
Yeah, his ability, his bloodbending ability was pretty fucking sweet.
Bloodbending, yeah, it definitely was.
Draught means wire. Makes sense.
Which one was Draught?
He's the one that snuck in, tried to kill Freer in the jail.
Oh,
the hanger with the wire.
The one who literally used a wire ability to try to hang her, but she used her magic to concentrate around the wire so she didn't suffocate.
Yep. Ubel is bad.
Of course. Just bad.
She was a very bad character.
It also means scary evil character. It's bad, evil along those lines.
A murderer, so yeah.
Yes.
I love how when she passes or when she fails the second class wizard tournament, she's like, I mean, I feel like I passed as well as I failed.
Yeah, exactly.
She cut through it, but she also killed him in the process, and she's like, oh, cut too deep. Oh well.
Yeah, like she passed with flying colors, but because of the stipulation was you couldn't kill him. I was like, well, what the hell do you expect?
Mm-hmm. Like, finesse. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But she had no finesse. She's brute strength.
How do you expect me to move in an immovable object, and then when I do surpass that, oops, he died. Like, that's his fault, not mine.
Because the rules strictly said, don't kill me.
I'm just saying, like, that's it. Like, this is an impossible test until you pass the impossible. If you pass the impossible, you fail.
She can take out any first class mage. I mean, right? She could take out Senza.
Yeah.
She could take out Senza. I mean, even she was like, I'm way too scared to go against this girl.
Yeah, right? She even admitted it right away. Like, she's the only one I can't beat.
Ooh.
Are you still looking up?
Yes.
I'm trying to think of, like, does anyone else have, like, a cool German name? I can't think of anyone else. Richter. What's his name?
Judge.
Interesting.
Richter is a surname of German origin, meaning judge.
Oh, I think it's kind of cool that Flamme means flame and Frieren means freeze, ice and fire. That's kind of cool.
And then Sari, S-E-R-I-E,
mm-hmm.
That means, unfortunately, there's not a one-word translation for this. It all depends on the context, but...
Which context looks like it would fit this elf?
Because,
Does it ever say how old he is or she is?
No.
Like, who's older, Firin or Sari?
Sari's definitely older because she is the one that trained Flamme. Oh, actually, that's not fair because...
No, Flamme just found Firin.
Yeah, Flamme found Firin, but if you're judging appearances at that point, Frieren definitely looked childish at that point. So as far as you can throw elvish years at that, she definitely looked younger than what Ciri could have looked like.
The website just says age 1000 plus, whereas we know that Frieren is 1000
minimum. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but there's lots of times when Ciri was on camera and I thought for sure she looked pretty goblin-esque.
I thought she was a bad guy. This whole time, I thought she was the bad guy.
I mean, she doesn't give a shit about anything. So she's like, she's only in it for herself. That's for sure.
Do you think Sari, whatever her name is, do you think her and Frieren will ever get into a fight? And who do you think would win?
That's a good question.
One thing I will say, because we're thinking hypotheticals, they have to fight. So the question is, who would win in a fight between Frieren and Zare?
Mm-hmm. And we've seen Frieren with her top level magic. We have to assume that there's level even beyond, there's magic beyond that probably. Uh-huh. But just from that, I think she would stand her ground very well against Zari.
Defensively, yes. I think Frieren defensively understands things a lot better. But Zari, I think she's just more advanced. And I think she's just, as of right now, Zari is definitely going to win a battle. So,
but Frieren is battle tested, whereas Zari just sits on her throne and reads all day.
True. So, but she knows more. She knows everything, apparently.
Zari
book smart.
Would yeah. not, if you remember, Flamel has a conversation with her. And basically, Zari would never finish a fight because she would enjoy it too much, which is why she would never kill the Demon King.
Okay. When does she say that?
When they're having their conversation about Frieren.
Hmm.
Because she's talking about how she took up a mage, and she talks about how she's basically going to change the world, and she's going to kill the Demon King because she loves magic for magic, not for what Zari loves it for, which is
for learning.
For learning and being strong.
Mm-hmm. She would never kill the Demon King, kind of like a Goku like aspect, like, oh, I don't want to kill you because then you'll be gone and I'll have no one to train against.
Yep.
Yeah. Almost like
out of my plaything.
Yeah, like a live and let live kind of thing.
Yep.
Hmm. So you think she'll just toy with Frieren the entire time?
Yes. Here's a question.
I think that would be so cool, though, regardless.
Yes, I completely agree. I do have a question. Do you think she suppresses her magic at all?
She does. Remember, she says, she was like, you can't notice my fluctuations, and Fern noticed her fluctuations. Mm-hmm. And that's why she became a first class mage. She was like, oh, you're fluctuating. And she was like, oh, you passed.
And just in addition to that, just as a visual aspect, we know that just on instinct, we know as viewers that she is incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. And we saw her aura output, and that output wasn't really that big. And going back to the demon arc, when Frieren let loose a little bit, we saw the radius of her aura. That is so much more expansive than what we saw at episode 27, 28, where Zara was showing herself off a little. Like, mm-hmm. she wasn't showing off, like just as she was. So I think that says a lot in itself as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Which is also going to spark another question. Flamel yes. was the one that introduced the idea of suppressing your aura. So okay. do you think Flamel taught Zara about that as well? And then she thought that was a good idea, and so she started suppressing her aura?
Or was it Flamma, or was it Zari who told Flamma about it?
God,
that was her good. One wish kind of thing.
Yeah, good rebuttal. I think it could have even started there. Good point.
Because she was her teacher.
Exactly.
So
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you remember, Frieren talks about how elves know to do it, they just don't. So I think Zari would have told Flamel how to do it, and Flamel would have understood, because she understands demons, she would have understood that I need to do this all the time. Like, she basically went and ran with the idea of suppressing the magic, and Zari basically was like, I'm bored. I'm going to do this and try and see what happens.
Sure.
Because she doesn't suppress it nearly as much as Frieren does.
True.
But I also think that's a instinctive thing to kind of lure people in, if that makes sense.
Could be. Maybe it could be like that fine point, be like, I'm strong enough. Like, she, the level of her aura is strong, is enough to allude that I'm strong, don't fuck with me, / I'm weak enough, test me. But then as soon as those people who want to test her, like, obviously they're going to lose, but maybe it could be that fine point, but like, she knows the comfort level of her own aura output.
Yep. It's exactly what she did to Fern, where she's just kind of testing everybody and being like, how are people going to react to this? Where it's a lot, but it's not everything.
Right.
I did find it super funny. The one, Motide, which is the one that passes because of how she reacted to Zari when she saw her. You guys remember? It's the blonde haired one, brunette, dirty blonde, I guess you could call her.
Is she the one that said that she was like, oh, well, you came in here, you thought about how to fight me? No, never mind. I think this is a dude.
That was Draken.
Yeah, Denkin.
Denkin, yeah.
Denkin, yep, that's how that first started out.
She is the one where Zari asked, what did you think when you first saw me? And she was like, well, I thought you were kind of small and cute.
Oh, according to this one, this character sheet, Methode?
Mia? I don't I don't think you
Metode.
The H.
Metode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Metode was Metode. The one that during the clone arc, she was the one that was experimenting with like trying to put Frieren to sleep and like do all these like debuffs. But we found out that the clones didn't have real personalities. So she debuffs aren't going to work. But yeah, she was, and then she's like, oh, you smell pretty and kind of stuff like that.
Like you smell nice and you're short, you're small and cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Metode.
Yeah. So I thought that that interaction with Zare and her was funny because it was just like kind of like awkward and like, well, I thought you were this. I was not intimidated, but I thought you were kind of cute and tiny.
Do you think Zare was intimidated by Ubel?
Absolutely not.
No.
No.
At that point, you know, now that we're bringing this up, I would like to see a matchup with that because Ubel is definitely overflowing with confidence for the most part. So if she could imagine cutting through her she has the confidence to do so, like she would be a formidable foe towards her.
So I think Zare would be smart enough / most mages would be smart enough to use regular defensive magic and make it so that is what she has to cut through because she can't imagine cutting through it versus clothing or hair or any normal object that you can cut through because that's what's going to stop it. Because she thinks, oh, it's just a normal thing I can cut with my scissors. I can cut through it, no problem. Hair, clothing, and technically flesh you can cut through. If you remember the fight against Verbal, like the only thing that she wasn't able to cut his defensive magic, but she was able to cut him up, if that makes sense. So that's going to be the difference between for her, especially.
The only thing that I could really think of that Zare versus Ubel, how Zare might come on top of Ubel is because Zare might pull some old school shit that Ubel isn't familiar with. And I'm only really saying this because Frieren made a comment about how Fern grew up with Zoctril, and that's just common knowledge to her. So it's easier to not think and waste a moment's thought on defensive kind of activities. So I wonder, I guess what it really comes down to is Ubel needs to be unfamiliar with what Zare might be capable of. So
which she is a walking encyclopedia of grimoires. So
right. Yeah. So I think that's the only reason. Yeah. She just knows too much to defend herself with. So she knows every counter to everything you'd imagine. So that's why I think she would still come out on top.
Yep.
Gotcha. And we've both run over our favorite characters. Matt, who's your favorite character of this show?
Oh God, yeah. Let's rewind a half hour.
I feel like it's going to be a lot of people are going to say Frieren because she is a great character.
Yeah, that's too easy. She's obviously a favorite for everybody. She hits check marks for a lot of things.
Yes, and her character building is fantastic. Like I wanted to put that out there. She is a fantastic choice for a favorite character, like even more so than just being the main character, because she just goes through such a transformation and she's such a great character that I want to make sure that we, you know, talk about Frieren as like a potential favorite character. But mine's going to be Fern. Like she's my favorite character.
Yeah. I was about to pick Fern myself because just for the same aspects of Frieren with character development, Fern is right there as well.
Yep. And her love of sweets. You know, everybody's happy when you can have some nice, tasty bread. So
she had the cutest expressions. It was just so funny. Whenever she got mad, I was always like, ah, there she goes.
She's hangry all the time.
That's okay. She's 18.
Yeah.
One thing I forgot to mention is, do you remember when Frieren had her like funny moments where her eyes got like just the circles or just like the black dots, like the big black dots, and she just kind of
like chibi-esque?
Yeah, so that actually happens in the manga as well, and I thought that was so funny.
Oh, okay.
It'd be very easy to just do that in the anime and call it a day, but no, that happens in the manga as well, and I laughed every time.
Okay, very, very fun.
This is actually kind of cool.
Yes.
She has a lot I love her her fight scene where you really get to see her just freaking just go off on that one flying girl in the tuning exam. And she just is relentless, and she just keeps just blast, 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 blast with her staff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, Fern, like, fucking kick ass.
Oh, yeah, she was just sitting there blasting all the simple magic spells and just overloading that one chick. And it's like, yeah.
Eerie,
it was like,
by the way.
Who?
Eerie.
Eerie, yeah, yeah. She blasted her out of the sky. That was fucking great.
Oh, yeah, the one who was on the same team as Verbal.
Verbal. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, so that, I thought all of her fights were so good. Like, I legit got chills with the Freyrin fights, but I was so drawn into all of Fern's fights. They were so good. Just the, and then of course, when Fern is like, well, Master told me that mages nowadays, like, this is enough. This is all I need. And Fern definitely shows that is all you need is basic offensive magic.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, you just master the basics and you're going to be above and beyond with that alone.
Yeah, which, do you guys remember the reason why they're using elemental magic now over basic magic?
It's because it puts like sustenance behind something. Like, you're blocking a water wave, you're blocking an earthquake, you're not blocking just regular magic spells.
Yeah, pretty much. So the defensive magic was made to stop the basic offensive magic. So now, in order to stop more complex magic, something was, you need to basically perfect it. And in order to perfect it, you have to put a bunch of mana into it to make it strong enough to stop it. So now you can just put a bunch of weight and power behind this, these objects, essentially, and break through the defensive magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's essentially relatable to technology. Is we are comfortable with where we are in technology, but something has to get better. And in order for something to get better, you need to find something to defend against that. And it's just going to be a ladder system beyond that. So yeah, it's offensive, defensive, and it's just learning about everything in general.
Well, kind of like going back to like the whole like medieval times. I mean, like, you had your basic chainmail, and then they created bows and arrows. Arrows could shoot through the chainmail. So how do they combat that? They got the full sets of metal armor, and that just made the opponents create the crossbow, and the crossbow could shoot a bolt straight through the armor set. So it's all about, you know, making something with higher impact to, you know, beat the defensive.
Right. And this is all revolving around Zoldrak, which was at the time the most powerful magic spell.
Yeah.
Offensively.
I thought that was kind of cool how it went from the most feared spell to basic offensive magic.
Yeah. Like, that's just so elementary at this point in age. Like, anybody can do this. And we know how to defend against it because it's so well known.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I kind of alluded to it, but do you guys have a favorite moment?
Absolutely.
All right, let's hear it, Alec.
That Freyrin fight with Freyrin against her clone and Fern. That scene was just the whole, all the magic spells going on, the animations, all the colors. It was just everything put into one. It was exactly what I wanted to see. Like, I wanted to see magic past the basic level offensive and defensive magic. I wanted to see, where does Freyrin really go when she has to like kill something that's really powerful? And I got exactly what I wanted. That scene was just so bad. I watched it literally 4 times in a row.
Yeah.
And the music was really good.
Yep. Like, yep. It was definitely.
Just so, you could feel the power in the music that was portraying in what you were watching.
For sure. Lance, what about you?
Sorry, but to piggyback off of what you were saying, yes, we saw Freyrin versus Freyrin, but and just how beautiful and powerful that entire scene was, we of course have yet to see how the Demon Lord was defeated to begin with. So that's something that we're expecting to see in future seasons. So I'm hoping that this is only just a very good taste of the battle experience that it took to do so.
Yep.
So
I want to see that flashback so bad.
Exactly. So
you know we're getting it too.
Well, we have to. I mean, otherwise this is going to be a dud of an anime. This anime is nothing but flashbacks. So yes, of course we have to see this. I'm looking forward to it so much. So that, yes, Alec, that is definitely a very memorable and needed scene.
We do know that Freyrin did the final blow. She is the one that killed the Demon King.
Ooh,
but that's what they said. They said she is the one who killed him.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, because
she says we all did it together.
Yeah.
But she is definitely the one who did the final blow, and I want to see exactly how that happened.
Right. I was going to say that, yes, I would like to imagine that Freyrin is the one that ultimately took him down, but also at the same time, Himmel being the hero and that everyone knows Himmel's name, they're going to imagine that Himmel himself is the one that laid the final blow because he's the hero. Himmel, the hero. So I want to see a scene where Frieren is like, I'm the one that took him down, but I don't fucking care. I'll give you the credit kind of thing.
Where like she brings him down and then Himmel like chops off his head kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Or even something like that. Yeah, I'd be good with that.
Lance, do you have a favorite moment?
For myself, my favorite moment's going to come from my favorite arc. And that's going to be the entire demon introduction arc where they were showing all the demons and how they're bad and why they're bad. Okay. And that's going to be when Frieren is facing off against Aura. I'm pretty sure the American English version, they pronounce her name more of like an Aura, like a heart, like it was harder Aura. Anyway, when Frieren and Aura are going against each other and Aura had all this confidence about herself and she had that scale that showed like, if I have more mana than anybody else, I can take complete control of them. And she was trying to use it on Frieren. And then Frieren's like, ah, you simple bitch. You have no idea how much aura I have. And then she just fucking lets loose and just explodes everything. And then just completely,
Super Saiyan 500.
Exactly. It just completely overtakes her. And shows
it's over 9,000.
This is like mid-season. I think this was like the end of season core one kind of activity or like core one stuff.
It's episode 9.
Oh, okay. So not even that far. Like
almost the end of the core.
That was where it really showed you that Frieren had power.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like she's a badass and this is why. And the fact that she's concealing herself that much, and then like she had no fears going into this battle to begin with either. So Frieren's confidence is one to be feared. But the scene where she just overtakes Aura like nobody's business, that was one of my favorite scenes.
Understandable.
Matt, what about you?
So I will say it's definitely the moment when Frieren just obliterates all of her mana. I don't even know if it's all of it, but she kind of opens up all of her mana against Aura and was like, yeah, it's a good joke. I've been deceiving all of you since the beginning, and here's how I'm proving it. I thought that was fantastic. Some notable ones, something that really sticks out to me. I have two more. One is when Luger got attacked by Fern and he sees the resemblance from Fern to Frieren. Like that moment, I get chills every time I watch it. It was so good.
Oh, when he compares their eyes.
When they're both floating, they're both levitating, flying, whatever you want to call it. And she blasts the Zoltrek and almost kills him. And then he's like, oh yeah, this is how I remember who that elf was. And you see Frieren standing there instead, basically doing the same thing, and then it reverts to Fern. I thought I love that part. And then the other one is gonna be the one with Himmel, and it looks like he's proposing to Frieren
with that ring
the lotus flower ring.
There it is. Yep.
Because if you remember, Himmel loves flowers, so he's gonna know what a lotus flower is. So he's gonna know what that means. And like, if you think about it, this is something I saw on the internet. Himmel never got married. So, and why do you think that is? It's because he always loved Frieren.
Yep, 100%.
When she blew a kiss at him, he like literally like fell over.
Oh yeah, that was a funny scene.
Yeah, all these things that Himmel was doing for Frieren, he was doing it because he loved her. And it's like all of these impactful things that I feel. Well, I already said I don't want to guess, so I'm not gonna go down that rabbit hole. But I just loved I loved those moments because it was very heartfelt and very emotionally invested. And if we remember, the whole reason why Frieren is doing this is because she wants to feel that empathy. So how does she get that? She remembers the feelings that she had in part because of Himmel. So that's why I like these scenes, is because it kind of ties in everything together. And that's what I love about one of the things I love about this series is that they use the past to help push them through the future. And it's for a reason, not just because.
Yep, it's good.
So yeah, the ring. That's definitely one of my most memorable moments, for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely cute. And it was parallel to Stark and Fern's relationship too, so that was super cute how they did that. Everybody wants to see those two make it official. much like how that that one priest guy was like, why don't they just date already?
Sign,
yep.
Mm-hmm. One character that I honestly like really loved showing up was that random old man who would show up during Stark's training.
And
like Freer would come up like, who's that guy? He's like, I literally have no idea. He keeps talking at me while I train.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. He made like some kind of stupid comment, like now the student has become the master or something. Like he made all these like stupid cliche comments, and nothing of it.
He's like, yeah, you keep saying that.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that the humor of this show honestly like just sucked me in. There's so many funny moments. There's so many badass moments. The art is just absolutely amazing. Like this is just an all around quality show.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah, I do absolutely have a question.
Mm-hmm. What's up?
So let's talk about Ubel. Ubel was the green haired chick that can cut through anything, and she's following around the guy who can make doubles of himself, and she's trying super hard to and she's trying to figure out a way to get on his emotional level so that she can figure out how to do it herself. Now, with that explanation, do you feel that she's gonna figure out this ability herself, or do you think that we're not going to see any more out of this out of the upcoming season?
I think they're going to stay their ground, and I think like he's going to be the cloning guy, she's going to be the girl that can cut anything up. I think they're going to have their own little niche abilities. I don't think they're going to combine them. I think that would make people way too crazy good.
The world would be fucked if there was multiple Ubels.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Oh, that'd
be awful.
Yeah, Ubel is definitely on the verge of becoming OP.
Yep.
So she's definitely someone to be feared. Mm-hmm. So, and if she can duplicate herself, shit's going to go very wrong. So I would just like to see that. I would like to see that become an issue in the future, just to add some drama to the series.
She's definitely dangerous and one to keep an eye on.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen, just because she would be OP at that point. I don't think that's what they want for the series.
Yeah, multiple people that can cut through anything, like, and you can't see the attack, like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, it'll be, I am really looking forward to the next season, that's for sure.
So speaking of next season, do you guys think that this will conclude in the next season, whether that's going to be a one or two core kind of deal? What are your thoughts on that?
I think this is going to be a solid 3 to 4 season show. I don't see it going into like multi-seasons like Fairy Tail or, you know, Naruto, things like that. What I do like, though, is that this isn't your typical 12 episode anime. Like this brought back in the whole like 26, 28 episode, you know, season animes. And I kind of miss those. I kind of miss the old, you know, the olden style of like investing, you know, a good month into or a couple weeks into watching a show rather than just binging it over the course of a couple nights.
Right. So with that being, I was gonna say, so with that, do you imagine, because my next question is going to be, some anime go from a very long first season to a short and regular second season and beyond. Would you imagine the next upcoming seasons being regular 12 episode lengths, or would you imagine one more 24 episode second season and that being the closure?
I think it's all going to dictate by the original source, which is the manga. Right now we're at 140 something.
I think
maybe.
I think it was 128.
Yeah, 128.
Yeah.
So they could make all of that what's released into another season, into another 28 episode season, 24 episode season, whatever it is. The only thing is then you're waiting for the series to then fill itself out, get to the point in which you can create another season. It all depends. What if the series ends in, I don't think it would, but 20 chapters? Well, you're not gonna, you would probably make just a longer season at that point, maybe, I don't know, 32 episodes instead of, or make it some hour long episodes. It really just depends on how true they want to stay to the original source and what is going on within the original source. Because we might get to a point where we're at a clean break within 12 episodes. It's like, all right, here is the end of an arc. That's the end of the season. We got a lot of short arcs, except for the first grade mage arc, which was a little bit longer, but it was still only, what, four episodes?
It's like six-ish, yeah.
So every arc was a weird number. There was nothing like, this arc is 12 episodes, this arc is six episodes, this arc is... So that's the other issue, is that you run into problems trying to make the series fall within the scope of a season as well.
Right. Yeah, they're kind of beating this drum in its own beat. And that's perfectly fine, because that's the way they kind of started this whole thing, with releasing four episodes with the first episode drop schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Alec, what something I was going to say is, this show is so well done. You can watch it one week at a time, or you can binge it, and it still flows so well. So fantastic.
That's honestly what I really liked about the show. One thing I really liked about myself watching the show is I did zero background research. Like, I didn't read a synopsis. I didn't like look up any like videos or like clips of the show. And I think the only prelude I had is, I remember I'm part of a bunch of like anime groups on Facebook and whatnot, and I remember seeing a comment from some random dude on Facebook saying, Frieren is a good show, watch this. And I remember you guys were like, oh, we're gonna watch Frieren next, and I'm like, you know what, some random guy on Facebook said this was a good show, I'm just gonna dive into it. And that was the best way to approach the show, just completely just raw dog it, and just, you know, just give it to me. Just give the show to me completely raw, and it did not disappoint whatsoever.
Yeah, this is basically, this is a good show, period. And then that's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Solid.
Yeah, I do completely agree. I can understand some people's gripes about maybe some of the pacing. I had no issues with the pacing, but the world we live in now, there's always going to be somebody complaining about something. So it's like, I could kind of understand the pacing. It's like, oh, what, do we really need this many flashbacks? Yes, we need this many flashbacks, but I can kind of see it from their point of view, but I wouldn't change anything from the anime.
No,
literally nothing.
Yeah, what this anime is doing is literally perfect. Keep with this tempo, continue on with your future story, and explain why you're amazing through flashbacks, because every time we get a flashback, we just respect everything more and more.
Absolutely. I think it does a great job of showing like where Frieren's coming from, with like her level of patience and her level of understanding, and it ties the not of the show together.
Yeah, because I mean, even when Fern is having a flashback, and it's like, Frieren's trying, she just doesn't quite get us, but she's trying. Remember, she's trying, and that helped Fern.
Yeah, like,
that was big for her. It was Heiter explaining Frieren to her. Mm-hmm. Even as a child. So it's like, not all of these flashbacks are just for Frieren in retrospect and being like, oh yeah, moving forward, and that was a great time, so let me remember it.
Yeah, and even to compound on that, with just going with the understanding of how Fern might think psychologically, when Sign was fighting that giant plant, he was once told, lean on Frieren and she'll take care of the issue. And literally all that Frieren said is, wake me up and I'll take care of this. He's like, okay, I'm going to trust that. Even though it's only going to last 5 seconds, he did it anyway and it paid out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, the flashbacks are necessary. The pacing is necessary. Like, it's hard to world build. It is hard to build the world without some of this stuff that they're doing. It's like, yeah, cool, we could just kind of skip over everything, but then it's not as deep. Everything's just surface level. And like, some of the magic wouldn't make sense. The couple episodes where they're going to kill Qual, if they would have never explained that part of this series, we wouldn't have missed out on anything, but we also wouldn't have gotten the background information that we needed to understand why this quote-unquote basic offensive magic is very prominent. It just adds depth to everything, because it's like, we can put it in modern times where it's like, if you know, kids, they grow up with a touchscreen cell phone, but you know, we grew up with the flip phone where it just covered the numbers, and we experienced this whole thing. And so it just means more to us that we have a phone that can do everything versus, you know, a 16-year-old that's always had a touchscreen phone.
Right. They've always had it the easier way, and we've had to build our way to it. And
it's like, we're masters with our thumbs. Like, how do you do that? It's like, well, I used to have to know how to text with, you know, manipulating three letters at a time.
Yeah, right. T9.
Yeah.
it adds to the depth of the show by doing these little things that in retrospect don't really change anything besides adding a cool character.
Yep, I 100% agree. It's all necessary, and they do an amazing job showing us that it's all important and don't overlook it.
Yep, and don't be a Lance and just judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, yeah. I fail at that every single time I watch an anime.
I mean, in your defense, we weren't really that far when you're like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll start watching it. I think it was like 7 episodes in, which in all actuality was only four weeks into the series.
Yeah, and honestly, I was more so waiting for it to be dubbed so I can just casually watch it.
Yep. Not casually watching it, but yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I feel like we could literally go for hours and hours and hours talking about this. But is there anything specific you want to talk about?
I guess kind of going back to the pacing of the show, one thing I did kind of, at first, I didn't like it. I'm like, God, this show is so slow. Yeah. And then it kind of took me a second. I was like, wait a minute. This is all from the perspective of Frieren. She's 1,000 years old. Time to her means nothing. So like once I started thinking about it from her point of view, the show just started making so much more sense, and it actually got me liking the slow dynamic of the show itself. Yep.
Totally agree.
And I mean, they kind of make jabs at it, especially in the beginning where they're in a village and Frieren's like, oh, we can spend 3 years here, and Fern's like, no more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So they're making like they bring the reality of the situation, which is to Frieren, 3 years, 5 years, whatever she said it was, to her is probably only about 2 weeks to her, but it's the inverse of the person saying it. That's what makes it even more funny.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to bring that more into perspective, at that point, Fern's been traveling with her for like 4 years at this point. So she's already put up with this kind of BS. And she's
for a flower.
Yeah, exactly. And she's built up this confidence, but like, okay, we need to really move it on here. Like we don't have to be here. So let's hurry this up.
But it was totally worth it for those 6 months searching for that flower. Like that scene when she was able to make that whole the field of flowers because she was able to see at that point, like it all kind of came together. Like this is why they spent 6 months for it, because it was the perfect flower for Himmel.
Right.
And like it just kind of like just showed her like, wow, patience does mean something here.
Right. They made it perfect, and it all came through because Frieren connected the dots, but like this stupid squirrel is gonna hide these seeds inside this stupid stump, and that's where all the flowers were, and then they just made it work from there.
Mm-hmm. One person I want to talk about, which also brings into a timeline thing, Croft.
Okay.
Or Craft, however you want to say it, the elf.
Yep.
Do you guys remember how long they stayed in that cabin for?
Ooh, it was months.
Wasn't it a couple, like 3 months?
It was 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important because they're in the north, so basically they only get 6 months of travel every 12 months. So that's going to play, I feel like that's going to play a big part of it as well. But so we've met 2 elves so far in the series. Do you think we're going to meet many more?
I'd like to.
They did say they were very rare, right?
They very rare. They're basically asexual, so, you know, they don't reproduce.
And if you want to bring into scope, when Croft said the last time he saw an elf was 300 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that should bring into perspective that seeing an elf in general should be one of the most rare things in the world.
Yep.
And yet here we are. We saw Croft. We saw Zydal, or whatever her name is. I would like to imagine that we get to see another elf or two in the next season, or at least in the future.
Okay.
And if that's the case, I would like to see another monotone little person who is also a badass on the side, because again, they've lived forever and they just know so much.
Okay.
So at least one. We have to see at least one more elf. I would like to see that.
I could agree with that. We'll definitely meet more elves along the way, but I think they're going to really reinforce Frieren, Croft, and Zari.
Okay, that makes sense.
Also, speaking of Croft, we saw his statue side by side with another member of his old crew that we have no idea who it is. So I would like to see a little bit more backstory on Croft and whoever that guy is.
Wasn't it another priest? It was a mage?
I believe so, yeah. I don't think they said anything, but I don't think it was a priest.
But isn't that why that the priest that joins their party, shit, what was
Sign.
His name? Sign. Isn't that why he became a priest? Was because he saw that statue with Croft and the other guy?
Yeah, for the most part. I think what Alec is trying to remember is when him and Gorilla Warrior went to go see that, and they gave themselves like, I'm going to be Gorilla, you're going to be Goatee Priest, and we have to be rememberable somehow.
So I believe Sign was already like working towards being a priest at that age. I think the statues had more to do with, I want to live forever. I want to make a name for myself forever. Not necessarily these, like what the jobs of these two people were.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's all just to be remembered.
Yeah.
That was the whole purpose.
Yep. But yeah, I'd be very, very interested to find more, either more elves or see how the two elves that we've currently interacted with come back into play. But that's really all I got. Lance, do you have anything else?
No, that's gonna be it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we've kind of covered everything. I'm really excited to see who they bring back in the next season. I want to see who they introduce into the next season. But I have a lot of high hopes for this show. I'm glad we watched it, and I'm gonna keep my eyes out for the next season, and I'm definitely gonna watch that.
Yeah, loved it. Again, I loved this series. It was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Lance, I know you had a quiz for us. See if we can see if you can stump us with some Pokemon questions. See how good I remember from my childhood.
Yeah.
When you say OG, which generations is like just Gen 1 or?
Yeah, we're going back to Gen 1, Red, Blue, and Yellow.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so question 1. In Pokemon Red and Blue, can Pikachu learn the ability to use Thunderbolt?
No, it can't. Can't get Pikachu Red and Blue because he's only available in Yellow. The trick question.
All right, Matt, what's your thought?
So no, you can get all 151 Pokemon in Red and Blue, but I don't think you can use Thunderbolt in Red and Blue. I know you can use it in Yellow. I do remember that, but I don't think so much in Red and Blue.
All right. Now, to answer the general question, can Pikachu learn Thunderbolt in Red and Blue? The answer is no. Pikachu never learns it in its original moveset. Alec, you can catch Pikachu in Viridian Forest. You can catch him very, very early on in the game series.
Wait, really?
Yeah. He's considered a rare catch, but you can always catch him in Viridian, just where you catch Caterpie and Weedle.
No.
Yeah, he's there.
I need to go back there. I need to log in. I have a Pokemon Blue that I've been playing since I was 12 years, 12, 10? I don't even know. I still have my very first ever Pokemon Blue. I still play it. And I need to check to see if I have Pikachu, because normally I don't leave an area until I've caught all the Pokemon and moved on.
Typically. From my experience, Pikachu only spawned in the immediate far left area as soon as you entered Viridian, and the far right area. But that's only my experience. You could probably catch them everywhere in the grass, but that's where I personally explored, and that's where I'm home, so that's where I've caught the Pikachus.
Our brain finds patterns and absolute randomness.
Exactly. That's probably what it is. But that's where I caught Pikachu back then. Oh, and yeah,
cool.
In Pokemon Yellow, Pikachu learns Thunderbolt at 26, and in Yellow, when I played it, I didn't fight Misty until my Pikachu learned that, so I can just totally obliterate her.
So one hit KO.
What I remember doing is I would get Thunderbolt and use PP up on Thunderbolt until I couldn't.
Yep, 100%.
Upgrade it anymore and get rid of Thunder Shock. So yep. Then I would have Thunderbolt and Thunder, and then two random moves that I don't remember.
Quick Attack, of course.
No, because I think I used whatever the speed one was to upgrade his speed all the way too.
Oh. Okay, bring on the next question.
Mew is instantly available in any patch of grass after you catch the original 150. That includes trading, obviously.
False. He only becomes available once you've beaten the final four. Is it final four or elite eight in the first point? I think it's the final four.
Elite four,
yeah.
So what was the question? Repeat the question.
Mew
available in any set of grass?
Yeah. After you catch, maybe I should say, after you obtain all 150, Mew can
can be catchable in any patch of grass.
No, I don't remember where I got Mew, but no, that's not true.
I've not caught Mew yet, but I want to say from past playthroughs, doesn't he show up in the first village you're in? Isn't he only available there?
No.
What is it? You got me stumped.
All right, the quick answer is no, that's not how that works. Also, the other quick answer is he's basically a cheat code. You have to do a variety. There's multiple different ways to get a Mew. Some are bunked, some are not, but you have to kind of cheat him in.
Okay, like go upwards on this rock and then go left and then right and then up and down and have a geode in your inventory kind of thing.
I do have a question. What is the award you get after you catch all 151 Pokemon in the original games?
You go to that nerd. You go to the nerd in the archaeology building, and he gives you shit. I've done this before. Oh my god, this was like my triumph as a 13-year-old kid. You go to that nerd in the building with the fossils, and he gives you like a list or something or a certificate. Lance, do you remember?
Honestly, I never actually caught the Mew. Actually, I've never even caught all of 150 in the original game, so I've never actually completed this myself.
Oh man. Okay, so. So this was the disdain of my childhood because, yes, you go where the, was it Cerulean Town? The one with the gambling area. You go into the building that has the nerd and you speak to the guy on the top floor and he gives you a certificate that says, congratulations, you caught all 151 Pokemon. Dude. And I was like, what is this? What kind of credit? Like, really? I did all these hundreds of hours of work for an in-game certificate.
I took a picture of that. That was like my greatest achievement as a teenager, dude. Like, I got that and I was like, yeah.
If you had the Poke printer or whatever it was, you could actually print it off.
Yep, that sounds familiar. Yep.
I didn't have that.
I was not cool enough for that as well. Definitely did not have money for things like that. But yes, that was an option. So yes, the BS certificate that you get for catching all 151 Pokemon.
Even if you, so I did it the solo dolo way where I had both games and I just kept restarting one game to consistently trade Pokemon over to the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you realize how many hours you have to put into both games in order to get all 151 Pokemon? It's so long, dude.
That's such bullshit.
Yeah, takes a long time. And I've definitely done stuff like that, especially in like Leaf Green and Fire Red. Yeah. I remember I had both versions and I did the exact same thing. In order to catch like Suicune, Entei, and Raikou, you can only get one of those legendaries per save file. So I purposely started the file over just so I can get that one legendary so I can trade it over to my other game.
Mm-hmm. And then restart all over again.
Yep. And that's like an end game thing. So you had to go through everything.
Multiple times.
So many hours. All right.
Kids
and I have...
these days will never know the struggle.
No, they won't.
No, they just get all the Pokemon no matter what.
Yeah. All right, I have one final question. Now, without going into details about how to activate the missing number cheat, when you activate it and when you find missing number, what item slot number gets multiplied? I'll give you a multiple question. Is it the fifth slot, the sixth slot, the seventh slot, or the eighth slot? Now, for pretense, one of those slots gets multiplied by like 250. I don't know for sure, but I know it was a shit ton. It appears to be almost infinite, but I remember very specifically multiplying my rare candy, and it was definitely not infinite because I remember running out and having to do the cheat all over again. So, which slot is it? The fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth slot item in your inventory? Which one of those gets multiplied?
Isn't it the seventh?
I don't know. We'll say five.
All right. Both wrong. It's going to be the sixth slot item. Mm-hmm. That's the one that gets multiplied.
Interesting. I don't think I ever... I was always against cheat codes, so I'm totally fine solo doloing. I mean, they're still putting the effort there, but cheat codes was always against those.
Oh, yeah?
I'm an honorable player.
No, when I found out about missing number, I totally abused that system.
You know, if you level up your Pokemon with rare candies, you don't gain the amount of attack, defense, special attack. You don't get those increases that you do normally through leveling up in battle.
I think that might be for later generations.
Not I know exactly it was sure. for Gen 3 for sure. Ruby and Sapphire, it definitely worked that way.
Right.
Where rare candies were really only used to like boost up a level, like to evolve someone, but not necessarily to overpower them.
Right. If you wanted to get competitively, you have to do it the old fashioned way. You can't do it the shortcut way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, back to missing number. I remember having fun times facing like a level 120 Bulbasaur and then catching that with my infinite master balls. And then as soon as you battle with that 120 Bulbasaur and give it, or you didn't even have to battle with it. If you give that level 120 Bulbasaur a rare candy, it would automatically go from 120 to level 100. And then you can evolve it to the Ivysaur right there. But of course, it's done at that point. So it really sucked.
Yeah.
You could never have a Venusaur.
Exactly. So pros and cons of cheating. So yeah, that's gonna complete my Pokemon quiz for today. So hope you all enjoyed that one for some old school knowledge.
Definitely. Love Pokemon. Always a classic.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, that's gonna close up today's episode. Thank you everybody to listening to us talk about Frieren. Please make sure to follow us on YouTube to follow our Short Flight series where we talk about hot new anime that comes out every season. We cover multiple anime week by week and we have a lot of fun with that. And if you'd like to stay up to date on anything anime related, make sure you follow the Anime Show on Facebook and Instagram. They've got a lot of great content on there. And please make sure to give us a rating and give us a follow so that you can help us grow as a community. And until next time, we'll see you guys. Ah!